Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. This is your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. And today we will be finishing up our conversation with Jay Duckworth. Welcome back.
Hey!
What a week it's been.
You know, the weather in New York has been absolutely frightful. Last week you guys had snow down there, right? It was pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
But now,
now everybody it's all cleared up. Kinda...
Yeah, it's great in California.
What's that?
It's great in California. The sun's shining.
Oh, my God.
I might go to the beach later, but you know.
What beach?
It's Tourmaline. Tourmaline Beach, I think.
Where the hell? What are you? Where are you at?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, my God.
Did you not know that?
No, I didn't know you were in San Diego. I mean, that's like the perfect weather. It's like 72.
Yeah.
Always.
I'm like surfing all the time. I feel so cool.
Yeah.
Now you go out to California every once in a while, Jay, right?
I do.
Humboldt.
Yeah, I love. I was just out of California. Thanks. Why? Thanks for bringing that up, Eric. I was just out of university, helping them out with a class on blood. Actually, yeah, I did an entire workshop on blood systems, blood packs, and because they were getting ready to do Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and Ray Robinson, she had me out, and oh my God, yeah, it just got announced last week that Evil Dead is going to be a part of the ATCF festival at Region 7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no way.
Yeah, but I go out ever so often with American College Theater Festival from the Kennedy Center, and I do workshops and speak, do keynotes. Yeah, I really love that. I love that because you get a feeling of exactly what we're about to talk about, hopefully, the next generation.
Yeah, you're basically meeting undergrads who are interested in props and ready to go out and start working.
And not only that, but when I adjudicate, there are, if anybody doesn't know what this is, everyone submits to have their work adjudicated by professionals in their expo. And what it does is there is a table set up with costumes, props, sound, sets, and design, as well as video. So everybody has a chance to show their work off. Stage managers show their run books. People show their pictures. And so I get to see pretty much everybody's work as it pertains to the level of theater that they are they're getting into.
And I think at least with props, there's definitely been a concerted effort in the last couple of years to have professional props masters adjudicating at every single one of the regions of the KCATCF.
It's really great. It's important that these people, that these younger folk get recognized for their work, and also that they know that their work is important. It's exactly like we were talking about last week, that your work is worth money. Your artistry and skills are worth money. I mean, because it's like there are certain core competencies that you need for props. As an educator, we need to, like, because we all are, you know, this is a craft that is the same as a medieval guild. You know, in that you have to learn from someone who has experience, because there it's like witchcraft.
And we're a big coven.
Exactly. Because you have to learn from a group, and you have to learn, you know, these tricks and the tricks of the trade from someone who has had success at failing. Because that, I think, is one of our biggest teachers is our failures. And that limits the choices we can make doing a project. Whereas when I was younger, and I'm sure when we were younger, we would go ahead and think like, oh my God, there's so many ways that I can do this. I'm just not even going to start. And once you throw perfection out the window, once you realize that perfection is a, is a false, it's an impossibility. You start taking your first steps towards getting your goal. at least try or sketch or Adam Daly does this. He will 3D print pieces of something he needs and use Legos as the core. While he's trying to build something or he's trying to test something, that's how he puts it together, which I think is that's what impressed me and blew me away about him. Not only is he incredible at what he does as a prop person, a carpenter, but he has, like Eric, an engineering mind that's precise, you know, and that's something we need. And then also, Ashley, you have like the crafts side where you understand hard goods, soft goods, additive sculpting, things that there's so much that goes into this, you know. I mean, just those hand skills are just the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I think most of us have at least one mentor, if not several mentors. And we could probably, if we look at all of our mentors, we could make a big family tree that goes all the way back to like the birth of Western theater, because it's like this unbroken chain of prop knowledge. It's not like people are just picking this up and figuring it all out from scratch by themselves. They're all kind of, we're all taught by each other as we go along. And so whether you're in formal education or not.
I agree. And I call that the golden thread.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes through every single one of us, everyone in the arts. It goes through all the way back to the first storytellers around the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, you can follow that lineage, like you said, all the way back there, because it is literally our job to tell stories, period. Mm-hmm. So that weave is an unbroken chain of mentor to student, like you said, not in educational or non-educational settings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I learned color theory from my mother. You know, she was a painter. She painted acrylics, and she was well known for her watercolors. And then Theoni Aldridge, when I got to George Street Playhouse, the incredible costume designer, taught me the psychology of color. You know, she was like, if someone's happy, I know to dress them in blue. And I was like, what do you mean? And then she sat down and we went through psychology of color, and I was just like, oh my, like, are you kidding me? You know, so I that stuff is really great. I just think that all of us have the duty to, like, what did you, like, Ashley, what did you do this week to, have you inspired somebody?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I feel that we've been getting a lot of emails from our podcast and just questions or ideas of how to make fake hamburgers, for example, and just kind of throwing out ideas and just brainstorming with them and just having them been like, oh, I never thought to use mashed potatoes to make hamburgers on stage. And just kind of like,
that either. That's great.
Just like take some mashed potatoes, throw some food coloring in it, and just kind of brainstorming with people.
Nice. That's great. How about you, Eric?
Me this week? Right now, I got an apprentice where I work. So I actually started teaching her how to weld this week.
Oh my God.
Basically set her up, you know, get her going, have her do some beads, look, make sure it's like, all right, that's all I can teach you. Now you have to practice it for like a few hours just on your own. Like there's only so much I could say to you. I'll be back at lunch to see how you're doing and give you some more tips then. But yeah, we have to build an outline of a car out of a quarter inch rod.
Oh, so it's
this big metal sculpture. So she's kind of taking that all on.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of her first time working with metal. And it's like, you know, every time you teach somebody how to work with metal, there's a couple skills. Metal's one of them where it's like, as they start to work with it and as they start to form things with it, they're like, oh my God, this is great. Now I can make all these things. You suddenly open my world to being able to create these things that I see. So that's always exciting.
It really is. It really is. It's almost like, going back to the witch analogy, it's almost like Hogwarts. You know, you go in and open another door and you're just like, oh my God, I can do this with this.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Or like, you know, I mean, when I learned, when Eric and I worked together, I had no idea about sewing. And Eric taught himself, and then I was just like, okay, I'm going to teach myself. And now that I'm sewing, I'm just like, oh my God, you know, and it's, it's, you know, and then welding, I would have loved to learn to weld from you. Cause you, not only, MIG or stick, you also TIG, which is just like,
that's right. We had a TIG at the public, didn't we?
Yeah.
Nobody knew how to use it.
I didn't know how to use a, what was it? A fire extinguisher. Whatever. I'm sorry. That's a joke. Whenever Eric would go away, like if he went on vacation for like, or a long weekend, I'd always text him and be like, oh my God, where is the fire extinguisher? And if you didn't text back, I'd just be like, okay, never mind. It burned itself out.
The problem solved itself. We're good.
Eventually, it's all. It's all.
I want to go back to the KCATF because I think there's another thing that's great with adjudicating things like that. And also at USATT as well, when you're there and you're looking at people's work and you're showing like prime examples of work, because a lot of, especially in the undergrad world, there's a lot of places where props isn't its own department and they don't have faculty. And so you have the one student who kind of finds themselves interested in it, but you have, you know, staff or faculty saying, oh, that's not a real department, you know, you work under the TD, you can't get a job doing this, you're just going, just go out and get us the rehearsal props, just do what we say, just, you know, you're just a member of the stage management team. There's all these weird places they place props, and so being able to go there and seeing like placed at the same level as the other departments and other people with like professional work, like I built the, you know, the dragon for The Hobbit, or I built the weapons for our post-apocalyptic Macbeth. And also here's some professionals who are like, who have been working for several decades and are still working, and they're adjudicating the work. It's really important for them to see, like, in the professional world, this is a department on the same level as scenery, lights, sound, costumes, and paints. This is not subservient to anything else. You know, this is a full-time job. It's a very difficult job, and it's a job where you could do like probably the coolest things in the theater world, if we're being honest.
Arguably,
yeah.
I was talking with my boyfriend the other day, and we were talking about science and religion, and I said someday science and religion. Oh no, science and the arts. And he was talking about that if you are not well-versed in math, they'll just keep you taking math courses over and over and over. Whereas if you can't paint or can't use a musical instrument, they're like, well, you're not adept to that. No, you just that's something you'll never learn. Whereas we should treat the arts the same as every other discipline. And I was like, well, someday those two will merge. Arts and sciences will merge. And he's like, they have. He said, that's technical theater. And I was just like, oh my God. Yeah, I was, it blew my mind. That's so true. I was like, are you kidding me? And he was like, what? And I was like, that's genius, because it is. It is art and science, hand in hand. You know, and I think, again, going back to why arts are dangerous is we are the first people who are arrested. We are the first people who are kicked out of the state, you know, like a Rome or Greece or whatever it is. The arts are always suppressed. And that's because... And what we do, especially props people, we are on the verge of being able to do espionage, because we can make things disappear. You know, we can make it look like there's someone behind something. You know, we can cast a shadow that looks like somebody moving and no one's there. You know, so what we do is magical. And that's the thing. We don't take a bow, you know, we don't take a bow because we are the magicians in the back. You know, we do the magic in the back. And when you see the set turn or the curtain open and you hear the, oh, you know, before actors get on the stage, I mean, that gives me a high, because that's because, you know, you're touching them on an emotional level that they thought was gone, you know, and that's what props does. Is props, it reaches out to you and touches your, a place that you thought you no longer had. It cuts the callus off the soul. Sorry. Like you said, Ashley, I'll go off on a tangent and just not go, where were we talking about? You know?
I love it. But it's true. There's something about whenever I hear an audience have an audible reaction to seeing a prop on stage, it's just the highlight of everything. Because you know you've done something. They see your work. They're impressed. They're like, whoa, we're here. We're in this world together. That makes everything worth it.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing Troilus and Cressida and had made sure that we put air hoses in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Because it took place in Greece, like a fight between Greece and Turkey, mm-hmm. as it was originally. So these air hoses went through dirt, so that you could follow the progression of the guns kicking up dirt as if they were shot into, you know, so.
Wow.
But you had the audience had a visceral reaction from that. And you're that's yours, you know, or when the guy fell on the ground, he gets stabbed and falls on the ground. And I asked Dan Sullivan, I was like, how much blood do you want? And he's like, how much can you give me? And what we did, a pond fountain, in a bucket of blood underneath him. So when he fell into a pump, and that pump started, and there was a 3-foot ring of blood, of wet blood around this guy. Yeah. And that's the same thing. You know, you feel that emotion, you feel something, because it's like, how does that happen? There's no way that there's that much blood in blood packs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a similar thing when the actors kind of get their final props or something, when they're first on stage for the first time and you're getting the furniture or something. And especially when it's like this carefully constructed world and you see them sort of like suddenly feel the world for the first time and they kind of mm-hmm. like sink into it and they're like, oh, yeah. 1930s England, we're here. Or like, oh, yeah. I'm a butler carrying the tray. Now I'm my character. Now this is it.
Well, I think that also falls under the category of nervous actors at the very beginning, Eric, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when they first start out, they want all kinds of props.
Right.
Just because they need something to hold in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why those always get lost. But when you do, like you said, the final props, you give them something, it imbues them with power.
Mm-hmm.
And I also believe that props have a spirit of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Because I gave John Lithgow the knife when he was our King Lear.
Mm-hmm.
I found James Earl Jones knife from when he played Lear. Mm-hmm. And when we're up at the Delacorte, I was like, I wanted to wait to give you this. And I said, this is the knife that blah, blah, blah used on his. And he was just like, oh my God, I can't wear that. And J.O. Saunders was sitting next to him. He's like, I remember seeing that production when I was in high school. It clicks because the actors know there's magic there.
Yeah.
There's magic inside those things.
Mm-hmm. They're spooky props. Spooky. Yeah, haunted props. Like a scary doll or something. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I got it.
So jumping back to what we were kind of starting earlier with education. You do so much for the props community, Jay, and are always pushing to educate and educate and educate, which I love so much. And I myself have learned so much from you. Let's kind of start there. I don't even know where to begin with that. Let's start with your interns, because you do have interns every year and you give them journals.
Yes. And all my students too. I ask my students to have Moleskine notebooks, and mm-hmm. I just put 2 that I finished in my backpack today. This is so crazy. I have the new one in. This is mine with my prop symbol on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all my months and my goals like ready. Ready. I'm ready for, because it's Christmas. We're getting ready for, I'm sorry, it's a holiday and we're getting ready for the new year. So I've got to have everything prepped.
Mm-hmm.
When you get the Moleskine notebook, it's because there is an importance of writing things down than just hearing them. And you must write them because it puts something from an abstract idea into physical form. And the big thing I tell everybody is write down the names you hear of people in the shop. Mm-hmm. Like if you hear somebody named Dan Sullivan a couple times, or John Lee Beatty, or Anna Luizos, or Jennifer Tipton, write those names down and then go to Google, search them, write what they do down, and then put a picture of them. So it's mm-hmm. a baseball card for the people in our universe. Mm-hmm. That way you know exactly who you're dealing with out there. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you don't know how to navigate your world, how are you going to get anywhere?
Yeah.
And the other thing is I ask them to write down recipes, how to make a glaze, how to do marbling, how to make a stamp edge, you know, all these ideas. And if they have any ideas, they're encouraged to use the book to draw out how to engineer it. Mm-hmm. And we also go through, I take them through ancient civilization all the way up to the Middle Ages. It used to go to the Victorian age, but we just don't have time because mm-hmm. we're doing programming up at the park and then also down at the, at downtown. Mm-hmm. So there's not enough time to teach them everything. So we start at the Stone Age, and we flint knap so that they can make a blade. So they learn how to make a blade. So they break it and then use a deer horn to crack a blade. And then we take sheep fleece. Mm-hmm. And I teach them how to clean fleece and spin on a spindle, like a drop spindle, the same that they had in Mesopotamia and Egypt, so that they can make string, and then we ply that string to make it stronger. And then from there, they take those two items and make a bow drill. And the drill has to be able to cut into wood. So they have to be able to work this drill either like a pump drill or a bow drill. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we go on and they do a report of three individuals from each time period that we're studying, that build on each other. So we start in Babylon, mm-hmm. and then we work all, like I said, all the way up to medieval England.
Wow.
Yeah. So we go through different things, and sometimes they'll make a wax diptych, which is the Egyptians, Romans, everybody used it. It was a block of wood that was carved out in the center, and you filled it with beeswax and coal, like burnt coal, so it became black. And then you took a stick and you just wrote into it onto the wax. Mm-hmm. So you could take that information and when you needed it, you could put it on paper or papyrus or whatever you needed, and then scrape the wax or heat it up so it cleaned it again. Awesome. So you had a new. So yeah. So we go through those things and they do reports on not only the people, but they also do like the Fibonacci sequence and perspective, and they have to learn as much as possible in order to have an idea about where we sometimes get an education, because the Renaissance, right after the Black Plague, thank God that everybody died and the money went down to enough people that they started funding arts. And from there, that's when we learn about the arts from there on forward. Mm-hmm. So this is all the pre-stuff that they need to know. And it's not that they need to know it for props. It's mostly important for cocktail conversation. No, for props.
I love it.
I think it's very important. I still keep journals to this day. I mean, mm-hmm. and because I get interested in the weirdest damn things, and because I'm an autodidact, I will grab that thing and I will squeeze that rock until there's no more blood to come out of it. And then I'll see another shiny object across the room, and then I'll be like, "Oh my God, I gotta find out exactly mm-hmm. everything." It's like a song, that new song. You're like, "Oh my God, I have to listen to this song so much until I hate it."
Yes.
So I'm a little bit insufferable like that.
No. But it is important to write everything down. I mean, I do that mm-hmm. a lot, looking through books or something about working with materials and you see some little technique, just some little thing, I'll snap a picture with my iPhone just so I could like draw it out later, you know, oh, this is a way to fold sheet metal, or this is a different way to like thread a button or something like that, and just keep all those little scraps of paper in a file folder and just build it up. And it's like people email stuff or people talk on Facebook like, here's my blood recipes, and I'm like, print that out, save that. Yeah. I don't want to be like digging around for it later. I'll keep it all.
After you draw it, like, guys, does it become three-dimensional in your mind? I mean, does it just like change from the time you see it to once you draw it, you can look at it from every angle? Does that happen to you guys, or am I just like, I'm crazy?
No, I think
one or two projects that's happened before, where I would sketch it out and be like, oh, okay, now I can actually see it.
Yeah.
And I know for me, if you're drawing something and if you like, you get stuck, you realize you don't understand it. But if you could draw it out sort of like as you interpret it, then you know that like, okay, I get it. This is how this is working.
Yeah. Or this will not work at all.
Right.
Here is the giant flaw. Oh, it doesn't have a back.
Right. You draw the impossible triangle where all the pieces are like, right, like, wait a minute, this isn't a physically, like, this doesn't exist.
It has two legs, but 3 feet.
Yeah.
But
how is that? These lines never connect. Wait a minute.
but believe me, those requests have come down from a rehearsal hall before. I need a table with 2 legs and 3 feet tomorrow. We're running this scene again. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll turn that right around for you.
We need it white, but it needs to be a dark shade of white. No, not gray.
If I wanted it gray, I would have said gray.
Did a I say dark ivory? White. Not off white. I don't know.
I don't understand why you don't understand what I'm saying. Oh, God. All of us are insane for doing this job, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
That's why they keep us around, because all the same people left. It's like job security.
All the same people are like, wait a minute. Yeah, I'll keep doing it. Something's not right here.
I'm going to go sell insurance. Good for you. Go sell. I'm okay here. I'm just going to hand the hammer over to myself.
Got to run in circles. That's good.
Eric, you hold the hammer. When I nod my head, you hit it.
Ow. Oh, that's what you said.
Exactly. The notebooks are great. And the thing that I found with my college students is I am a lot less coddling, because with my interns, there's only 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then with my college students, I have 19 usually in a class. Wow. And so I know a lot of them don't have the journal. And so on their final exam, and I'm sure that they're going to hear this one day and just be, you know, hear this and just be like, oh, okay. Oh, Professor Stockhorst on there. Let's listen. Oh, now. Okay. I know what we're going to do. Never mind. I asked them to, I say that you can use your notebooks. The only thing you can use is your notebooks. And if you want a bonus, rip out the very first page and put it on the test. Because on the very first page, every time I start with this same thing, I'm like, draw a triangle. And at one of the corners, it doesn't matter which one you choose, put helpful. At one of the corners, I want you to put true. And at another corner, I want you to put honest. And I was like, these are the components that you need to work with me moving forward. When you being honest with somebody, you tell me that you can't use a tool. You have to tell me that you aren't safe using this. Or if someone is asking for your opinion, you have to be honest. And that ties directly into being helpful. Honesty doesn't work if you are not helpful. I think your project sucks. Okay, why does it suck? Suck is objective. Or is it subjective, or objective?
It depends.
Yeah, subjective. And that's funny. I got it. So you have to be able to help them and be honest with them, and also be honest with yourself on your limitations, so you know exactly what you have, so you know what you can work with, and you know where to build from. Mm-hmm. And then true means true to your vision in the art. There is a tape that each one of us come with. There is a the DNA inside of us that is our art. And mm-hmm. our art is totally unique to us as individuals. When somebody tries to take that away, you have to be very careful and you have to stop them. You have to be true to the vision. Don't, no matter what an educator says, no matter what anybody does, no matter what anybody tells you, mm-hmm. you have to be true to that artist inside of you, because yes, you are a piece of the universe made flesh for a temporary time so the universe is able to express itself as art. I asked them at the end of it, I'm like, rip out that page and just put it on the, because a lot of them don't have notebooks. Mm-hmm. A lot of them just don't write it. And they don't realize that at the very end, that's all I want from them, is I want them to be true to their art.
I know. You tell them, like, keep a notebook, and they just stare at you like, now.
I'm like, write that down. And they take out their phones. I'm like, you have a book.
Use the book.
One of the requirements for this class is having a Moleskine notebook. And I think also just, you know, once we teach them that that they do have value, they can make that into something. That's when they become whole moving forward. Mm-hmm. Art doesn't exist at all until someone interacts with it, until someone looks at it or has an emotional response to it. It's nothing until that happens. What we have to do is we have to be able to look inside ourselves and inside of our own house and the dark corners in that house and clean them up and find out what rooms need work and what rooms are fine. Mm-hmm. And if there are parts of the house that need to be torn down, they need to be torn down. I mean, in the end, we're serving a greater good. Mm-hmm. The people still come. People go to theater and you're like a film and you're happy that there's no one there. You know, where if you come to theater, if you come to a theater, you want to be surrounded by people because you want this experience. Mm-hmm. It's an experience that you all have, because we make people want to be human. We bring the humanity back to people because they see augmented reality in, as Eric would say, come out to the Delacorte Theater and she see William Shakespeare's plays in 3D.
We've been doing it for years. You don't even need special glasses.
You, if you just come out and open your eyes, oh my, it's almost like I can touch them.
Guess what? They did this whole show in one take, one continuous take. It's amazing. How much work went into it?
One take. That's genius. I'm sorry I go on. I'm very passionate about that. And I go off on rants about, and I think we're engineered. Society is engineered to place arts lower because arts empower people and arts make people think. Mm-hmm.
You know, they always say, like, they always bring out these articles like, oh, we should have music in schools because it helps improve math scores, or we should have theater because it helps you in like PR or something. It's like, why can't we say, oh, we should have math because it helps improve your music? You know, it never goes the other way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's because they don't teach those, because it's like, you have to take math and you don't have to take music. Ah, he's not adept to it. So let's just.
You always see these students, they're like, when am I going to use algebra in real life? It's like, when am I going to enjoy music in real life? It's like, oh. That's
so good. Yeah, true.
I love it.
That's very true.
But no, I think it's great that you're passionate about it, because especially going back to students and education, you know, a lot of these young students feel like they feel self-conscious about being passionate about it, or that they shouldn't get excited about it or something. And so it's always great when you go to like the props lab at USITT this past year. There were so many people, you know, this was their first like experience meeting other props students, other props professionals, and realizing they are part of this larger world, and that there are people who are as excited about everything they're excited about, whether it's like, how do you do a stage fight with weapons, or how do you make furniture break apart, or how do you do fake blood, or how do you cast fake fruit, you know, that sort of thing that nobody else they know is excited about. And all of a sudden there's like, there's a community and there's an entire like universe of people out there, you know, sharing the same passions.
Yeah.
That community is kind of what we did when the Prop Summit started, you know, and that was just totally out of me thanking people for helping me get through the first year at the public. You know, there was, what was there, 12 of us?
It was 2009. There were somewhere between 12 and 20 people throughout the night. But never, never that many. It was enough to like all be in the picture at one time. It was definitely a small group. And most of them aren't in New York anymore, which is the funny thing.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it grew so fast because then it like, it was like 4 or 5 years later and you're filling up the Newman stage, the audience at the Newman Theater, which is the same theater they did Hamilton at. You know, it's not a small theater.
Yeah.
So it's like the entire audience is filled. They're like, well, we don't have space anymore. we can't just run to the Walgreens right before and pick up 3 cases of beer. This is a much larger crowd than we can handle anymore.
We do wine and beer and cheese now, and we have guest speakers. We have people fly out from Colorado.
Oh, wow.
You know,
drive down from Boston.
You know, Emerson does a alumni picture. It's all there. It's all there.
At the summit. Oh, yeah.
It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, I hate to cut this conversation short, but
now you do, because you're just doing it.
We've got to wrap up. But before we do, is there anything you would like to add, Jay?
I just want to thank you guys for what you're doing. And I want to thank you very much for having me on. I hope I can come back and talk with you guys sometime about stuff.
And do you have any future appearances already planned, KCATF or anywhere where people can meet you?
No.
Okay.
I was going to go teach a couple workshops and adjudicate at Region 1. But Jake Gyllenhaal's show, it had to be moved because he's filming, and then we have to move the play to accommodate that. So I'm unable to speak, as we'll be in tech with Jake Gyllenhaal. The first time I meet him, I'm definitely going up and be like, oh, hi, I'm Jay Duckworth. You must be Mr. Gyllenhaal. I did that with Dan Radcliffe. When I met Dan Radcliffe, we started talking downstairs, and I was like, by the way, I'm Jay Duckworth. And he goes, oh, I'm Dan Radcliffe. And I was like, I didn't catch a last name. What was that? And he almost said it. He was like, and I just smiled. He's like, okay. and that's my final statement.
Perfect.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys for listening in. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Miche and email us with any questions or ideas for future episodes at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify, and check out our website at silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, where you could find all of our old episodes, or visit our Patreon to support us. This is your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next time.
Bye.